What I'm going to do is I'm going to talk to you about the internet and internet searches and forensics in general. It's a big subject, of course, and I want to show you some of the live aspects or some of the core concepts as I go along in a live environment. And of course, as being live, anything can go wrong. So I'm hoping for the best. My name is Dan Kavejic. I'm a PhD in digital forensics. And I've had about 15 or 14 to 15 years in digital forensics in general. I started my life in academia, researching computer forensics. I've then since moved into industry, and I'm currently now in pro search. And what I've done in my, you know, my career is I've done digital forensics in general on all devices, on hard drives and phones, and now the internet. And what I found is that although there is a core set of concepts that's kind of kept us digital forensics all the way through to make it formal and pragmatic. There are some things in the internet specifically that's made it more like a Wild West. And there's always some core concepts are a bit different and a bit difficult to understand. And that's what we need to understand here. This is the first presentation today. So I'm going to try and make it as a soft intro to the whole technical aspect. Because I understand I'm talking to a legal audience here, but coming from a technical perspective, it's nice to go slowly first, and my colleague Daniel will explore further concepts that are more technical in my second presentation. What I want to talk about is not just how the internet works, or its core concepts, or how it's structured, or how even a website works. I want to talk more about how it's functioning in terms of digital forensics. And how do we get the data, and how do we investigate the data on the internet? It's one thing to investigate a hard drive or a laptop or a phone that we always get, we can physically hold and maintain. The internet is a whole kind of ephemeral thing that we connect to and can change. What I want to understand, what I want to basically convey in this presentation is the core concepts of how the internet got to where it is now. And also specifically how social media has changed a lot of the aspects that we talk about. And we're going to talk about some hidden features of websites and how to gather that evidence, most importantly, how to gather it so they can rely on it in court when you're presenting it. Now, I want to differentiate the investigative part, basically what technicians do, like myself and Daniel and others. And the presentation part with legal people, lawyers and solicitors go in court, because they're slightly different. What we do is investigate. We want to make sure that we do everything correctly and right. And what you do when you present it is you do a condensed version of the evidence, but that can always go back and have an audit trail of what happened before. What I want to do specifically is, because we have a fairly large amount of time, about an hour, I want to show a real life example, or at least have a real life example in mind when we talk through this presentation, because it always helps to reinvigorate the mind and kind of brings it back to reality, exactly what we're trying to do. There's nothing theoretical here. We're always trying to do something real. I'll go into that in a minute. And what I don't want to talk about is anything too technical. Because it can degrade very much into very very high technical concepts very quickly with internet and all the technologies surrounding it. I want to keep this quite general, and so that all my main concepts, my main points, have come across sufficiently. I'm not a legal person. I'm not a lawyer, so I'm not going to talk about any legalities here. Any jurisdictional issues, any legal issues about collecting evidence from certain sites, about legal issues of social media, so a hot topic. I'm going to keep that open and leave the professionals to that in the next few presentations. I'm also going to talk about open source forensics. Open source means that it's free and anybody can do it online. Yes, you need some technical expertise to understand how it works in the background and understand where to go and what to search for. But I'm not going to talk about any of the governmental or the really high-powered software that other institutions may have to do the really fancy stuff, because obviously that's for legal enforcement or law enforcement officers, or for governments, or for you know, people with money. At the moment, I'm going to try and keep it simple, and I'm going to keep only the stuff that is accessible to us and is free to use around the internet. And finally, I won't have all the answers. I will talk about a specific case, but that's still ongoing, and I'll introduce some concepts, some websites, some social media that that case revolves around. But I don't have all the answers on the questions I'm posing. And what I want to do really is spark some thoughts in your head of what the technical technicians are dealing with in the day-to-day investigations. Commonly, we get legal or lawyers, solicitors asking for the impossible. You know, can you do this? Can you do that? And there are some things that are still unanswered, and they're still up in the air. Obviously, we wouldn't be here if everything was nice and easy. What I want to do though is I want to talk about a simple single case study that's currently happening in the world and that you might have heard about just last month. And I use this example because it has, well, it's current. It has a lot of the topics and concepts that we're going to talk about, and it's going to spark our in investigation into this realm, into this domain of forensics and in internet investigations and social media and how it all works and where we are at the moment. And this concept, this case study is surrounding the GameStop saga, quote unquote. So if you haven't heard, in the last month, late February, early February, there was a stock market surge on the share price of GameStop. And GameStop is one of the last US-based physical shops that sells merchandise, video game merchandise and video games. It's similar to a bookshop, but they sell video games instead. Now, they've obviously, with the onset of remote working and everything being online, they have suffered quite a bit, and their stock price is traditionally quite low. That's, I think it was about $10, maybe $20, $30 a stock, and that's how it performed for quite a long time. Wall Street, as you know, invests in stocks, and one of their things that they do is they do this thing called short selling, is where they bet that a certain stock will fall in value even further, and they will then reap benefits in the future. Or sorry, the Wall Street investors would then take advantage of that. But eventually, they just shorted it. That's what it's called. They shorted the stock. They bet that it's gonna reduce. A bunch of online communities, social media communities, and their users like GameStop, because most of the social media users are male. They're, you know, they like video games. They've been raised on video games, and they like GameStop, and they've decided en masse to hike up the value of GameStop, the stocks, by buying up the stock. And what happened over a couple of days, over a very, very short point of time, millions of users, not just thousands, but millions of users bought small amounts of GameStop stock, increasing its value to unprecedented levels. I think at the height, it came up to $400 a share, like 50 times its original value, meaning that all those Reddit, all those Wall Street investors who bet that the GameStop stock will fall lost out on a lot of money. Was a big shock to them because they thought that was going to go down. And those people that and those social media users who bought stock early and saw that the GameStop stock rose 50 times its original value made a lot of money because their stock rose in value. So it's a known tactic. It's called a short squeeze, and it's well known. But the unique thing about it is that it was organized en masse by social media investors, or social media activists, or retail investors, that they're called, small scale, normal people, like you and me, who just invest in GameStop, or invest in stock on like a few stocks at a time, nothing huge, nothing like Wall Street, where they invest millions. They were organized over a social media site called Reddit, over a specific part of Reddit called Wall Street Bets. It's a small community. Well, it's a large community now, but it was a niche community at the time. But also over Facebook, over sites like Twitter, and over sites called, over other services called Discord. And essentially, they made GameStop stock, or buying GameStop stock, viral. and they made it rise in value tremendously. And it was a big shock to the system. And the SEC, or the Stock Exchange Commission in the US, is now doing an investigation on these posts on the social media to see whether there was any organized hiking of the stocks, hiking of value of stocks. Because although a short squeeze is fine, manipulating stocks like that is not fine. And obviously there's a lot of users. Could those users have been actual other Wall Street investors urging social or manipulating social media to its own ends? So there's a lot of work here. And what they're doing at the moment is they're scouring all those posts, scouring all the social media to see whether that's true and what happened in the past. And one person they focused on is this guy called Keith Gill. Now, Keith Gill is just a small-time investor, but he's nothing like a Wall Street guy. He does buy stocks, but he's a small-time investor. But he has a large social media presence, and he managed to rile up the social media users to buy the GameStop stock, and therefore hike up his own value. And he's now a very rich person. He has a username on Reddit, and I apologize for cursing. It's a deep fucking value. And he also has a few other accounts on Twitter and YouTube where he, even before February, even last year, the year before, he was trying to promote the purchase of GameStop. And it was only in February that actually took hold and bit. So where do we look for evidence for this? Where would the Stock Exchange Commission look for evidence, and how would they find it? Now, I'm going to assume the Stock Exchange Commission doesn't have US governmental support and is doing open source forensic like us. Well, obviously it's not, but you know, for the purpose of the presentation, it will be. So by the numbers, the GameStop saga is quite a large one, and we have no chance of doing a thorough investigation in all of this. We're going to use this as a driver to go and talk about the various aspects of the evidence that's involved in this case. But just by the numbers, the Wall Street Bets users community is 9 million users strong. It was only 2 million users strong last January. So it's grown ridiculously amount in a small number of time. It was 58,000 posts a day, and that could have gone higher since I've got these numbers back. But not just Reddit, there's also Facebook, there's also YouTube, there's also Twitter, and there have also a large number of posts there as well. And one particular one is Robinhood Stock Traders in Facebook, which is 161,000 users. I don't actually have a number how much it's grown, but it's quite a large one. And Keith Gill, although he's quite a small presence, like three social media accounts, he has quite a large number of YouTube videos and quite a large number of Reddit posts and history. So the Stock Exchange Commission would focus on him, but they also would want to focus on all the other people he's been talking to, maybe he's organized with other organizations as well. So how do we identify this? And how can we collect it? That's the main questions that we want to find. Because, well, why do we want to collect it in the first place, you might say? Because in the general forensics process, or the digital forensic process, is a very well organized and agreed upon process. There's a five or six stage state process, beginning with the identification of the documents. So we identify what you're looking for, what you're trying to preserve. You then take a copy of those documents, and you segregate as much as possible that data so that it doesn't change. So in the terms of normal hard drive or forensics or PC forensics or laptop or mobile phone, what this would mean is you would take that physical device into your own custody and prevent anybody else from accessing it. Kind of like putting out yellow tape or police tape around your crime scene. You don't want anybody going in there and changing things up, because obviously then it's gone and unreliable. For phones and for physical hard drives, that's easy. But for websites and for social media activity, it's quite a lot difficult. But the point is that we take a copy for ourselves in which we do our investigation. We then do an examination of the evidence of the devices, analysis, and then presentation. The presentation is probably where you, as legal personnel, come in, where you present the evidence into court in terms of findings and what happened in the case. But what I want to focus on is these two, the identification of the websites, the posts and the social media of Keith Gill and the others involved in this GameStop push. How do we preserve that evidence so that it doesn't change? If it can change, it doesn't change. And so that we can examine it more closely. I will go through the various concepts of why we want to preserve things. Why can't we just do it online? Why can't we just search the Reddit website and read it there and leave it at that? Because, you know, Reddit is not going to delete their own content. And even if they said, we won't delete it, how can we trust their search process or their search engines? And is it actually usable? We follow four guidelines or four principles, commonly known as the ACPO guidelines or the Association of Chief of Police Officers guidelines. And these guidelines are kind of pillars in our process, and they ensure that whatever we do as technicians or forensic investigators ends up being reliable in court, and we can stand over our process so that we don't actually infringe or any of the rights. The first rule is that no action taken should change the data held on a digital device, computer or mobile phone that may be subsequently relied upon evidence in court, which makes sense. So if you're looking at a PC or a phone or a website, you're not allowed to change the content on that hard drive or the PC or the website, because if you do in any way, it's not reliable anymore. Things have changed. It's open to question now, and suddenly it's not as reliable as you might have wanted. So the first rule says that you can't change any content on these devices. Rule two, where a person finds it necessary to access original data, that person must be competent to do so and be able to explain their actions. So what that means is if I can't make a copy of the data and investigate it, and I have to access the original, I have to open the laptop and turn it on and work on it, that will change some content. So if, for example, if I take a laptop into custody and I open it to look into what's it like you find on CSI or any of the crime shows, by mere fact of turning it on, the data gets changed. But sometimes I have to do that, and there's no way of not turning it on. So when a situation like that happens, I have to be able to explain what happened and be able to account for any changes that happened. Websites, this is exactly the problem. If I access a website today, I take a note of what's on it, and I access the same website tomorrow, the content is different. Even though I might have taken a copy of the original the website, I still look at if I look at it live, it has changed. Why has it changed? And does it really matter? And can we rely on the content that's on the website now? ACPO rule 2-3 says that all actions applied in digital evidence all actions should be recorded and preserved. So an audit trail must happen. And this is important because once we take a copy of the data, or once we take once we collect websites, we must do it in such a way as reliable as possible, so that when we go back to the original one, we'll be able to see what has happened. And if we use specific tools, we must be able to show that those tools are correct and that they haven't changed anything in the meantime. And finally, the individual in charge of investigation has overall responsibility to ensure these principles are followed, it basically says the person who's doing the work is responsible for the end of it. But the question is, our aim here is to preserve this Reddit information, this Facebook information, this Keith Gill's social media presence as accurately as possible, so that we can do our investigation. And our question is, well, can we do that? Their website, the social media websites. And in order to answer that question, well, we need to answer, well, what is a website and how does it work? Because if we know how it works, we'll be able to account for any differences, any changes we see in our process, in our preservation process.